The one-year anniversary of the Bureau of Justice Assistance Body-Worn Camera podcast series. Speaking today are Dr. Chip Coldren, Michael Russa, Dr. Michael White, and Todd Maxwell.
Let's talk to Dr. White for a few minutes. Mike, you wrote a report in 2014 that was published by the COPS office on assessing the evidence for body-worn camera research. It was a very valuable contribution to the field and probably at the time one of the most downloaded reports that anybody could remember. I wonder if you might take a few minutes and talk about any important research that's been completed since that time and what you think is, what's in the works right now in terms of research on body-worn cameras.
Sure, Chip. I'd be happy to do that. When I would give presentations on the research on body-worn cameras, in the weeks and months after that report came out, I had a slide that I would use that would list the available studies that had been published. And at the time, there were three or four studies on the slide. And now when I do that same presentation and I use that same slide, I can't even fit everything on it. There are dozens and dozens of studies that have come out. And that's a long way of saying that we've learned a whole lot in the last two and a half years about body-worn cameras, about planning, about implementation, and about outcomes that we can expect. I think there are four areas that I'd like to highlight in terms of where we've had some real growth in our understanding. The first is that the Rialto study, when it came out back in 2014, received a ton of attention, and with good reason. It had a rigorous research design, really important outcomes, big drops in complaints and use of force. But the lingering question was whether or not that was kind of lightning in a bottle, or would we see those kinds of reductions in other studies? Two years later, the good news is that we've seen those kinds of reductions in other studies. Of course, shortly after Rialto, we had seen that with the MESA study and with Phoenix as well. But more recently, researchers at the University of South Florida have published studies on the Orlando Police Department, on the Tampa, Florida Police Department, and again, we've seen sizable reductions in use of force and citizen complaints after officers begin wearing cameras. The second point, though, is that that hasn't been universal. There have been announced a handful of studies that have come out that have not found those Rialto-like reductions in the big-ticket outcomes. There have been a couple of studies that show no impact, and even recently there was a study that came out that found increases in use of force that were tied to the deployment of body-worn cameras. And I think the importance of those studies is that it's telling us that, I think context matters, planning matters, the implementation process matters. We can't always expect that you're going to have these automatic reductions in big outcomes just because officers start wearing cameras. There's a process that has to be followed, has to be deliberate, has to be cautious, it has to be collaborative. And when that happens, I think we can expect those types of big outcomes. But when it doesn't, we shouldn't expect that we're going to see large reductions in use of force and complaints and other outcomes. The two other areas I would point to where there's been a lot of development, a lot of research, one area is officer perception. Obviously, the degree to which officers embrace this technology is critically important to its effective use, and there have been, I think, half a dozen studies now that have surveyed officers over time, asking them questions about the technology both before they wear cameras and after. And those studies consistently show that officer support is relatively high, and it importantly, it increases after they start wearing the technology. So as they get more comfortable with the technology, they increasingly embrace it. And the last point I would raise involves citizens and citizen perceptions. When the study was, or when my report was published back in 2014, we really had no idea what citizens thought of body-worn cameras. And now we've seen a couple of studies that have been general population studies showing that citizens as a whole are supportive of officers wearing body-worn cameras. But more importantly, we've seen a few studies come out now research projects that are asking citizens who've actually been recorded how they feel about that. So it's not general population, it's the actual what I call consumers of police services, the people who are recorded. And we have results now from Spokane, Washington and Tempe, Arizona. And in both cases, the individuals who are recorded on body-worn cameras stating that they have very positive views about the technology and they're supportive of it. So those are four areas, I think, where we've seen a lot of development over the last few years.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's probably safe to say that even though there's been some different outcomes, the growing body of evidence is still pointing to more positive than negatives regarding the implementation of cameras. Is that fair to say?
I think it is fair to say. And, you know, one good example is Barak Ariel has been very active in terms of publishing research on body-worn cameras, and not all of his work has produced positive findings. So, for example, a few months ago, he had a study coming that was published that basically concluded that, you know, in some cases, use of force might increase after officers wear cameras. But the underlying story there was that whether or not an increase in use of force or a decrease in use of force was going to be observed was really tied to policy. And what he found was that, and he had studied, I think it was 10 different departments, when officers followed policy, meaning they activated the camera when they were supposed to, they advised citizens when they were supposed to, when that happened, use of force declined. But what he found is when officers did not follow policy, that is, they didn't activate the camera immediately, they didn't make the citizen notification, under those conditions, use of force would actually increase. So, even in the studies that have produced either null or negative findings, you know, I think as you look closer, you see just a little more nuance in terms of, the effects. And I think we need to stay focused on that. And that's a long way of saying, yes, I think still the majority of the research that's come out is very positive.
That's very valuable, actually, Mike. One other question for you. From your perspective, what do we need to pursue in terms of research on cameras?
I think there are a couple of areas that we as researchers really need to target over the next year. The first is a finding from Ariel's study that had just come out that I just referred to. And in that study, he found that assaults on officers were more common when officers were wearing cameras. So essentially, there was an increase in assaults among those officers who were wearing the technology compared to officers who were not. And that was the first study that's looked at that outcome. Obviously, that's a very, very important outcome. So I think researchers need to focus on that. There's been a tendency to look at just complaints and use of force, and I think this other big ticket item, assaults on officers, is important to look at. The other area I think we need to think about is whether or not the effects that we're seeing are going to be long-term or temporary. It's possible that officer behavior, citizen behavior, could change when body-worn cameras are deployed, but it's also possible that over time those positive effects may dissipate. And I think we need to kind of take a longer view of those findings and be cautious about that dissipation over time. The third area I think we need to focus on, and this is a really important one, is cost-benefit analysis, because as Mike had suggested earlier, there's significant cost associated with the implementation of a body-worn camera program. And, I've seen some media stories recently of departments balking at some of the costs, particularly with data storage and continued management, beyond, say, a grant period. So I think we need to do some fairly sophisticated cost-benefit analysis to offer some empirical evidence that would inform some of those debates that are happening around the country. And the last area I think we need to focus on is the downstream impact. You know, any intro to criminal justice textbook will tell you that the police are the gatekeepers of the criminal justice system. So that means that the The deployment of this technology has implications for those that are downstream, for prosecutors, for defense, and for courts. And I don't think we have a very good understanding of how this technology is going to affect those downstream processes. And I think we need to focus on that as well.
Good. Thanks. And if I might add one, I know you and I have talked about this in the past. We think that if there's a civilizing effect of the cameras, that this should be borne out in officer safety and officer injury rates. So I would also suggest that we spend some time looking at that as well.
Excellent point, yeah.
Yep, good. Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it. Todd, we're going to turn to you now. I'd like to start out just by asking you to talk a little bit about the current state of the body-worn camera toolkit and how it has been maintained and updated since it was implemented.
Oh, thank you. It's different being on this side, being interviewed. So right after we launched the toolkit, the body-worn camera team met with members from the White House to discuss next steps and met with some of their data scientists and web designers and experts in that field. And one of the updates or ideas they gave us was to always have fresh data on there, always be adding new content, always be looking at the next web design feature that you could incorporate, keeping new social media and keeping the site fresh. So right after we launched it, we started working on a new update to it. And the new update launched in May of 2016 of this year at IACP's Lean conference. And we basically redid the entire website. And what we did is we focused on analytics and what people out in the field were actually looking at and using. And then we updated the kit to focus on those areas and give it a better updated modern look to it, but also to focus on what the needs were. We wanted to make sure that those were anything they were clicking on and was important was featured. We also added an announcement ticker that allows us to put the latest research, the latest grant announcements, like we just the announcement from Department of Justice just came out, and the fact sheet that Mike was referring to earlier was posted up there, so it allows us to get something up there immediately. And we added an RSS feed so people can subscribe to it and get a lot of those announcement feeds. We also added new pages on there for our podcasts and videos, and we added a page on funding because that was a lot of the feedback we were getting. And speaking of feedback, we're always looking for feedback for the toolkit, and a lot of the change to the toolkit is driven by what law enforcement and prosecution and the community asked us for. So one of the things we were asked for was a funding page to talk about a lot of things that Mike was talking about in the beginning about solicitations and some of the resources out there. So we added that. Another feedback we got was that trying to find resources on the toolkit are somewhat hard. So we added a cool feature in a resource map that allows you to click on any state and get resources back for your state. So that allows for the sorting of it. We ended up adding about 300 more research evaluations, studies, law enforcement policies, pilot program reports, and other pertinent documents since the launch. We had about 200 at launch and have added a little over 300 since the launch. And those are all tied into the policies or to the resource map. And so we're sort of working on a resource map for the world also, because we've gotten a lot of, as Dr. White knows and as you know and Mike knows, we've gotten a lot of resources from Canada and in the UK on studies they've done there, but we're also starting to get feedback from Australia and Germany and Sweden and places like Jamaica and every place and Mumbai and places that are implementing cameras, and we want the toolkit not only to be a national resource, but to take the best practices from all over the world and put them in one spot. So that's pretty much, you know, we have some new features coming out that should be out in the next year. And the main feedback we took from all those people at the White House was to constantly update and keep your content fresh.
Yeah, I'll just tell you that what I hear from the sites that I talk to is that it has been tremendously helpful. So
I appreciate that I was talking to, we did a quick search the other day and it turned out to be one of the top hit site for resources and had the most resources of for law enforcement and prosecutors and community. And, you know, it's got things from representing, you know, defense attorneys, ACLU, all different agencies on there. So it ended up being like the largest repository of body-worn camera documents, which was pretty impressive.
Excellent. So let's just talk for a minute about the podcast series itself. And, you know, what was your original thinking about launching this? And maybe talk a little bit about where you'd like to see it go in the next year.
So the feedback we got was, like I said, from the White House, and then actually from some social media and website experts, was that you always need some new content, something interesting, something that hasn't been done. So the podcast was launched as an accompaniment to the podcast series, and it was something new that BJ was willing to try and do, and it was something that we put up not only on BJ.gov and the podcast series on the toolkit, but we also launched it on iTunes so we'd get a greater reach out there, which is something new for BJ, but I think it's gone over really well. It allowed us to do an accompaniment to the podcast or to the toolkit, because each time we focus and reference back to the toolkit, but it also allows us to have diversity of topics, and we can hit new and exciting things that are happening, new trends that are happening in the market. And so far this year, we've recorded 50 episodes, one a week. We commit to do a total of 52. So, at the anniversary, which this will be the anniversary episode, we'll have 52 episodes. And they've covered everything from defense, prosecutors, medium, small, large agencies, ACLU, victims, advocacy, privacy rights. So we've covered the gamut. And if you look at the series and what they've covered, it's quite a bit. So I think, to your question, you're asking where I'd like to see it go, is that I'd like to see it be agile and be able to cover new topics that are coming out and be able to talk to people about that. We talked about cloud storage in one episode, because agencies were struggling with the ability to do on-site storage versus cloud. So we talked about that. And then in one episode, we started talking about an officer's right to review video and before writing a report, because that was a hot topic. So I would like to see, the podcast series continue as an accompaniment to the toolkit and promote the ideas and the values of the toolkit and BJ, and also give information out to law enforcement that are considering policy and other aspects so they can make a well-informed decision on their policy. And, another important point is each week when the podcast is launched, there's social media attached to it. So it's hitting Twitter and Facebook and all these other areas with reminders of the podcast series, but of the toolkit also. So it's always giving us fresh content for both sites, for the toolkit and the podcast series. So that was the idea behind all of it.
Good. Thank you. And that's actually a point I was going to make as I'm getting ready to close out this podcast, is that this field and this technology is still very young, and there's a lot being learned. So we can talk about the types of technical assistance that are provided in terms of policy development and procurement and, finding storage options, working with prosecutors and other criminal justice agencies. I think that's all fairly predictable, but the nice thing about this body-worn camera technical assistance program is that it is agile. And the way it stays agile is that we listen to the people who use the toolkit, we listen to the people who come to the podcast, we listen to the people who attend our webinars, and it's that interaction that we have with the agencies and communities out there who have questions and who are coming to us with their emerging questions that we maybe didn't think of a year or two ago. That's the kind of interaction that makes this program very strong and, as you said, Todd, very agile.
Yeah.
So listen, go ahead.
That's exactly right. And some of the things that we're getting requests for now end up being around. We had requests not too long ago for probation and parole that want to use body cameras, and jail services want to use body cameras, which, we haven't focused a whole lot on. So it gives us a whole opportunity to be able to help.
Absolutely. Yes, thanks.
So if you don't mind, I'm sorry. As we get further into this, the 2015 grants, So we've been over, this is the close of the first year. They have another year going. But as BJA collects data that's about the grants management, it's also data about the implementation. So more content that we expect to see out there on the impact of the grant world having, but it's also the ability of the TA providers to collect, or I should say the subject matter experts, to collect more knowledge about it and keep forming this information going out. But kudos to Todd on spearheading the toolkit and the content gathering and focus so well. So thank you.
Very good. Very good. So I'd like to thank you, Mike, Rosa, Mike White, and Todd Maxwell. We appreciate hearing from each of you on these questions, and I think it's been a good discussion. In closing, we encourage law enforcement, justice, and public safety leaders whose agencies are interested in learning more about the implementation of body-worn cameras to visit the body-worn camera toolkit at www.bja.gov/BWC. This toolkit offers a variety of resources that agencies can use to help with adoption and use for community engagement, policy development, data collection, officer training, and educational purposes. We also encourage listeners to share and promote these resources with your colleagues and staff. Lastly, all of these resources, and especially the body-worn camera toolkit, have been designed as a national resource, your resource. Please submit your ideas for new content through the BWC support link at the bottom of the toolkit's homepage. This is Chip Coldren of the body-worn camera team signing off. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today.